Dublab. Welcome to The Quarantine Tapes, a daily podcast from Onassis, LA and Dublab. Hosted by Paul Holdengraber, this series chronicles shifting paradigms in the era of social distancing.
Greetings, this is Paul Holdengraber, your host for The Quarantine Tapes, brought to you by Onassis, LA and Dublab. I am thrilled to announce that we have asked various former Quarantine Tape guests to host, during a week, guests of their choice in total freedom. They have absolute carte blanche. This week, I have asked the very great Imani Perry, Professor of African Studies at Princeton University, to serve as our host. Imani Perry is an intellectual, a writer, born in Birmingham, Alabama, at the dawn of the freedom movement. She lives the life of the mind through literature, criticism, music, and art. Perry's hallmarks are passionate curiosity, rigorous contemplation, and dedication to the collective we. Her children, Freeman and Issa Rabb, she tells me, keep her honest and dreaming. I hope you enjoy this week of The Quarantine Tapes, hosted by Imani Perry.
Hi, Alicia.
Oh, hi, Imani.
How are you? How are you doing?
I'm great. Professor Perry.
So I wanted to begin actually with a reflection, because mm-hmm. I remember the very first time I met you, you were in an audience, you were not on stage this time, but you had this, I mean, I can visualize it, such incredible poise and grace and presence, that I looked and I said, well, she's somebody who does serious work. She's somebody, that was my initial response. And then I began to, what I think of as, I began following your voice. And today when I was thinking about how, I'm going to get emotional. I was thinking about how I would describe your work, besides just unbelievably beautiful and brilliant, and is that I see you as a vocal historian. You carry our history. You remix it. You signify on it. You tell it so beautifully. And for me, one of the most kind of poignant examples of this is in your Black Wall Street project. And so I wanted to talk about it and how it came to be. And tell that story a little bit.
Well, you know, first of all, thank you. You talking about following my voice, definitely for me, it does start with my audience poise. And I've never heard anyone acknowledge in quite that order the sense of being a musician from point of audience. Oftentimes we talk about being in the audience or what we appreciate about audience, but you put it on a timeline of your knowledge of my voice, seeing me in the audience. And I definitely take it super seriously. So that in terms of inculcating my children into music, pulling them in that audience. And I have to just say this, just to start it off before I talk about anything else, that for me is the real tribe. It's like, who do the kids listen to? When they talk to my mother, it's, what are you reading? You know, who have you read? So we're getting there into upper literacy, you know, they're just now 13. What are you reading? What have you read? For us, then when they're little babies, who are we taking them to listen to? Who do they see? So that's a lot of how I was raised. To think about music was a very serious opportunity. Also, a slightly less policed avenue. So that things I might want to say or could say with other credentials, such as, you know, you've been in the law. I read about your education just alone. Forget who you've taught, but what you have learned. Oh my gosh, it's like very stunning. So I'm a little intimidated, but girl, also I feel safe. So thank you in all your broad knowledge of everything. I grew up in that kind of house where your grandma calls you. She's like, oh, there's Black people on TV. There's a Black ballerina. There's a Black, she called me when Vanessa Williams, she called my dad, there's a Black, my dad's like, there's a Black quarterback. There's a Black quarterback. There's a Black tennis player. There's a Black. And I was at the time figure skating. Oh, Alicia, now wait a minute. There's a Black. So Debbie Thomas. So I have a whole project about figure skating that comes from only that small piece of connection. Me in Connecticut skating. Yes. And you know, not so well, but seriously. And then this woman, Stanford University.
Yes.
Never stopped studying for her medical degree during her Olympic training. So, and then she skates to Carmen, you know, the character Carmen. But then I'm like, but I, in my feeble way, am learning Carmen. Georges Bizet's Carmen, which is Prosper Mary May's Carmen, which then, how old do I have to be? I'm in my 40s when I'm reading about German philosophers' reviews of Prosper Mary May's Carmen and its arguments against chattel slavery in the U.S. as a direct coffee table talk. Well, they didn't have coffee table. They did with the salon, whatever, serious people talking about how we're going to cut up the world intellectually, that thing. Mm-hmm. That's Carmen. In its time, but that had been so washed away, even in all the ethnic-ish iterations of it and pointing and manifesting great operatic careers, but funneling, channeling through Carmen. They're doing all these things around it, except telling you the facts that he wrote it to give the middle finger to America.
Yes, right.
So, so y'all, this had last, this is not about being clever. Oh, it's spicy. Let's put a spicy woman. Oh, no, 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 no. At Charles Salon, to which I was not invited, you already were having this argument about how low it was, what was going on here. So anyway, I find a comfort in having to go back that far in the info to just get it on the level. You know, like there would be, I had a woman who was braiding my hair for a time. I only braided my hair for about 9 hot months and I looked hot, but that tension on my head, I was like, with all these thoughts running through my mind, I can't take 1 ounce of hair being pulled from my brow line. I can't. We got to run open and free. There's too many thoughts in here to add this. But man, I looked, oh, I loved how it looked. Might have to go back to that. Okay. But anyway, I digress. So I had this woman braiding my hair and she, you know, super energetic and like intense businesswoman. She had a lot of energy for talking about her her plans, financial and all kinds, with the clients in the seats. So she's talking about these this wonderful time we live in where there's all this generosity towards new home buyers. Like, oh, this bank, and they're kind of knocking on my door, and, you know, they want to get in this, start my business and get a, you know, but I was like, but didn't you know, like, yeah, but that's recompense, that's apology, that's federally required compensation to you for the rape that happened of the rest of America's pocketbook for years and years, but then very famously, like, you don't know. That's not a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to be very clear in my work. This is all prelude to Black Wall Street, by the way. I try to be very clear in all my work when someone is doing me a favor and when we're all just at work where we all belong, right? So, but she didn't know that history because she didn't read the paper and whoever the chit chat was, that wasn't the chit chat she was getting. So I sometimes you just have to go very far back to find the place at which you don't feel like just walking through the door, you owe somebody something or It's not that it had an idea. It's not an idea. It's 100 years. It's 200 years. It was done 350 years ago. Lauryn Hill did it in the 90s. So Black Wall Street. Here we go. Okay. So my father worked with numbers his whole life. He has an engineering degree from Stanford University. And the story he tells is that he didn't really know or think about what he wanted his major to be. And he asked the advisor, well, what's the hardest one? And they said, oh, electrical engineering. He said, okay, well, that's the one that I will do. There you go. So that was simple, right? Quick. So he's just very good with numbers. And I don't like the just in there, but I don't have the capacity to describe. It's a Toni Morrison level of, you know, what is warm pie to your marriage kind of equation with my dad. It's like his numbers are the pie. I don't know. It's something on a whole other level of life. But there you go. And I think that for me, it's the opposite. I'm like, oh, we're having liver for dinner. Oh, those are the numbers, right? Like, I know I have to have some, but I not find comfort there. But my father is a great person. So how can I connect to him through my music in a way that my kids can just open the book and remember it? That's a lot of what I think about too. Not so much what I want to do or this thing or that thing, but more like when I'm gone, when I'm dead, and my kids say, yeah, my mom was an opera singer. Is it a thing they just say, but there's no evidence? Or is there a thing that then gets analyzed? Is it an opera singer? Okay, well, what operas was you? Well, she wasn't in operas, but she did these things. Okay, so now it's really on me. What are the things? Chow, you better make some things. So I think about that a lot. So, okay, here's this document about my dad. He worked on Wall Street. He did corporate finance. He's retired now. That's why it's the past tense. So he was treasurer of IBM US. That's a job I can not only memorize the title of what it was, but I understand something of what that means because it has enough regular words in it.
But he also
worked on the Thrift Depositor Protection Board, and he was a governor of the post office. Like, mm-hmm. So when this whole post office treachery was happening over the past, but my dad had been also one of those guys, and I saw the actual work that you're supposed to do, mm-hmm. how they use financial minds to build it as a business. It's an enormous employer of Americans. It's an enormous employer of Americans whose lives function well also, because it has also so many shifts, and the compensations and the benefits are at the level where you can raise a family. And mm-hmm. so it's a very, very important, and for women as well. I could do this job. I mean, and I don't mean now, but maybe 20 years ago, do this job, get off at 4, be, you know, in that model that we were a little bit more in previously. So I always took it to be this really like honorific, like this really awesome thing that my dad was involved in, and putting Frederick Douglass on a little piece of art, you know, people can buy for whatever it was at the time, 22 cents or 26 cents. And I take a lot of pride in that. So I made it this show where I wanted to tell a lot of family stories, but through their connections to their employment. Mm-hmm. And I got a residency at National Sawdust in its very first year. National Sawdust is a center, a performing arts institution, a theater for new music and emerging tonalities, and also rarefied forms of contemporary music study, also for just plain old classical music, folk music. They've had some jazz run through, some hip hop run through, some world music, world pop, which if you lived in Holland and you were that rapper, it wouldn't be world pop to you. You'd be just a rapper. But if you live in Brooklyn, it's like, oh, the world. oh, these other people in Turkey and places. So really wonderful place. And I might as well be, you know, playing a zither in Turkey or something for how I feel sometimes in the musical world here. I just am like doing this thing where I feel like, oh, I see a lot of people doing this. To me, it's like, I get what this is, but see, it's just kind of this explaining yourself where you go. And I'm, as you can hear, I'm very long-winded and bad at it. So I use the music to just be the thing, like all this yada, yada. I just mean also like, right? Just just go through where I need to go through in my head and my body, and not explain it. We don't have time. Look at Prosper Mérimée trying to tell us, and it's yet 2020, and we're amazed when, you know, it's like, no, stop. So, because also those people earned to be here in 2020, right? They're not somebody's idea, right? Yes. Here they are doing the work. It's just, let's now support their excellence and not retell this myth through their body over and over and over. So anyway, I want to, as if we didn't know, meaning like let them take the ownership. They're telling you the story. So now just listen to them versus this other kind of need to highly frame it like it never happened before kind of thing. It's very boring. So Black Wall Street became a collection of songs that I had written about money, a collection of songs that were in the general population that are about money. God Bless the Child would be an example of this. So the way that I arranged it, the way I perform it the first time on the album with Brandon Ross and Jason Moran was off an arrangement I made off of some way my father used to play the piano in a very like kind of chordal left-hand kind of block harmony way, which means if you imagine, here's my hands and I'm going to put them in a position on the piano and I'm going to just move that position up the piano, right? But in classical music study, what you also find too is that that tends to lead to what I'd call a modal sound, which is bringing you backwards through the complexity of music in the Western canon so that it's getting more and more simple. It's dropping the things it can do until you get like, you know, the Gregorian chant, or what, that's not even proper voice leading for that at all. But they had all these rules, like you couldn't even skip a note. So ba ba ba, that takes a long time for people to get to. Ba 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 is like ba ba. That's illegal. Like you get a burn, right? You can't sing that distance between the notes, or you're gonna summon the devil. Yeah, this is true. So, I think about things like that when I'm building music through its rules and its values. Over a wide swath of time, embedding what I know about music and what I think about what I know about music. I think about where I learned it, who I learned it from, who it shuts out when I follow this rule, and who it invites in when I break another rule. I think about things like that a lot. And I'm still in the lab, like I'm still experimenting. So, God Bless the Child.
Yes.
I grew up with a lot. I grew up with a lot. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get a trap for the children of people who are privileged to work their whole lives and be compensated for it in decent kinds of ways. Then a trap we set up is that you start from scratch. You start from the beginning, where another group of people, maybe they're teaching their child something different. So after 300 years, 200 years, 20 years, after 10 years, you're going to get a slightly different mental setup. So what do I think about money? What do I feel about money? What about money brings me shame? And when you get to what about money brings me shame is that you have some, and that there hasn't been a song written about how you got it, or you're not part of the sports in, I don't know what that, see that now you hear my shivers talking to you, but like that, you know, industrial sports, what do they call that thing? That big machine.
I don't know, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. The thing that makes it okay to have gotten all your money from being a huge pop star or a left fielder or an actress, but not okay from something we don't know what that is. And it's legal. Okay. Right. Now you have a different target on your back, but from whom and why? So it was all growing up like this was like a very, it was the thing. I just would take notes on it. No big deal, but I just would notice like, maybe don't say that. Maybe say this. And what's weird is, you know, not weird for kids, they might begin with that type of innocence, but the more they're rewarded for one type of speech or the other, then you start to get warp in society. And if the parents don't fix it, you lose information generation to generation. You go backwards so fast. So, and I mean backwards, not in the way someone else would mean it. It's not for me, it's not malicious to go backwards. I go backwards all the time. Like I can't cook a chocolate cake from scratch and I cannot sew my own prom dress. I've gone backwards in my family line, going backwards in those directions. But I can do some other things for which they sacrifice for me to learn to do those things. So, you know, each generation I try to think about it like, okay, well, let me restitute. So let me put my sons in dance early.
Yes.
Alvin Ailey. Man, what an amazing program they have there for the youngest and for boys only, boys isolated with other boys, not isolated, boys in a dance class with other boys. Fabulous program to which I owe a lot of the sanity in my parenting, probably. It's like, oh, mommy, I want to do basketball. Okay, great. This ballet in African is going to really help you because I don't know why these children out here with stiff torsos think they're going to be killing it in high school. But no, your body, that's science. You have to get in there. Hello. Who's going to put you, how are you going to get in there? This is how you're going to get in there. It's not magic. Those aren't magical men on the court. They are embodying the state of the art because it also changes the technology of the play, the state of the art of the body. So you think you're learning it by watching TV, but not out with your body doing so? No, that's not how it works. So anyway, nobody in my family wanted to be a basketball star, but we appreciate that. What is that? All roads. Okay. Here I go with a thing I want to start to say in front of you, but I just don't know how to finish it. Dance ain't going to hurt a little black boy. It's going to help all the things, honey. And they go connect you to Africa.
I want to say quickly that your digressions are Morrisonian. Oh. They remind me of Morrison. And they also remind me of, there's, you know, that line in Nikki Giovanni's Ego Tripping where she says, even my errors are correct. I think even your digressions are very correct. Right. Because there's all, you know, it's about lineage. And also, and you tell me if this isn't right, but I think, you know, part of what you talk about with respect to money and shame and that, well, you know, we can't, there's this particular kind of survivor's guilt that I think Black people who have been able to find a way to carry and that we have to learn how to do something with it that feels meaningful and productive with the, with the legacies that we do have that are not fairly distributed, right? But give honor, right? Broadly, right, to the traditions of excellence that we have personally,
yes,
as well as those that did not receive the sort of the benefit of access, right? I mean, there's this kind of duality, right? And so, but you talked about Bizet and Carmen, and I just want to just, you know, to carry that on for a minute. You have it's the Battle of the Carmens, right? Is the piece, is that?
It's had a few names, but it's Battle of the Carmens, The Ice Project, and now Breaking Ice.
Okay. And you have Habanera with Stevie Wonder lyrics.
Yes.
And I just love that, you know, that blend, right? Because, I mean, you're pushing genre, which is why, so you have this side of historical recovery and engagement, and you go back, but you're also pushing us forward, right, in experimentation and working with artists and different genres. So obviously my question is not coherent, but I hope that's okay.
More than okay.
Yeah.
And affirmative action was maybe what you were getting to in the other one. My family is a product of affirmative action.
Oh, yes, me too.
If you wanted more of us, you keep it living. That's if you didn't, you'd be like, we've had quite enough of this. You will close the gates back up. And
the way you put it is so profound, because when you talked about this is, no one's doing you a favor, right? This is at the least
we
do, right?
This is what you...
And you're going to get all the greatness. Yes.
It's also selfish. It's self-preserving. Look, people who are afraid of things like retribution, they're not out of their minds. They're being logical. So the way you eliminate the need for that in other people is you put back to the best of your ability, not your forebear's ability. That opportunity correctly is gone.
Gone.
And nobody wants that from you, your ancestors' blood. Now you're getting into some, you know, weird talk. You can't help me with that. Also, HBO did a pretty good job with that. you can digitally gather ghosts, and we can have a grand old emotional time watching this fantasy show on television that gets into some history that we need to settle upon. So through fiction, through myth, through storytelling, drama, absolutely, we do need to do that. Get the ghosts talking to the ghosts. But just right now, practically speaking, I don't want what's yours. I just want what's mine. And I've done a little bit of loose and light accounting. And here's that bill. Now, my grandparents, for instance, were kicked out of their house in Oklahoma City. This is in my Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street, Tulsa race riot of 1921. The Greenwood section of Tulsa. That's a fantastic distinction to keep on making, because Oklahoma had Black towns, because Oklahoma was being viewed as a very conscientious destination to be an all-Black state. That is a part of this whole story that doesn't get told very often. It's one of the youngest states in the Union. It's one of the last to come together. And because of all of the monstrosity, so it's like, where are we going to drop the needle on this history? So let's not drop it. That what was going on was mass murder of Native people.
Yes.
And relocations, redistributions, and other moments where it was like, no, we're going to do this favor. But we just didn't have enough reconnaissance on it at the time. So who knew they were going to take back the favor? It was going to be a whole, you're going to fight a war on this side. You're going to fight a war on that. It's like triangles of wars of who's on which side at what moment. Very confusing. Mm-hmm. Beware the devil is always confusing. So cutting things that are clearly two things into three things first. And can we get these three things to look like 12 things by about tomorrow? Anytime somebody try to cut you up like this, you must resist. Be very aware of it. So anyway, micro distinction meant to divide. So now Black people are getting here. We're like, oh, well, there's oil. We all have money. There's Native money. There's white money, so-called white money. There's so-called Black money. A lot of rich people here. We're going to have Black state here, white people, also white state. So you have a lot about in Oregon, like the idea, oh, this is going to be a state for white people. So the fact that Oklahoma had this historic number in the Union, this is historic number of all Black towns, mm-hmm. is part of that groundwork they were laying for this design, right? Do you think that was not cute to their, oh, no. So the last attempted Holocaust was there, Tulsa,
yes.
Greenwood. The last time somebody thought, we're going to say a Black guy did this to work, and we're going to potentially try to wipe out the entire thing. Based that lesson number 2080 or whatever, we're going to try that one from the book again and hope that it extends. So into something more like a race war that gets on. So I am doing this piece about my father and finance. And he was born in Oklahoma. He was raised there. My parents went to Langston, met at Langston University in Langston, Oklahoma. Grandmother born Eufaula, grandfather born Muskogee. They taught at All Black Town, Clearview High School. He was the principal. My grandfather Ira Hall Sr. was the first Black. Okay, let's talk about micro distinction. My grandfather, an African-American man, was the first Black superintendent of the Black
schools,
mm-hmm. Oklahoma City public school system.
Yes. Explain that, because people, I think people may not understand that distinction.
So that you would carve somebody up, so it's a Black school system, mm-hmm. but it's still going to have, under a, in a white supremacist model, have to have a white leader of it. So there had been white superintendents of the Black public schools, but there had not been a yet a Black superintendent of the Black public schools. So when you're being slowed down in your progress, then you have to imagine, how long until we can have a Black superintendent of just what is now the integrated public schools? So Black Wall Street, I just ran into it on Google, the Tulsa, because I was like, look, my dad was on Wall Street, working on Wall Street. Morgan Stanley was one of his first, if not the first job he had on Wall Street. And that was Equal Opportunity Commission. It's like, well, Wall Street is hiring. So where are the best Black financial minds, mindeza in the country? Mm. Who's Black? Who speaks English? And who can get down here to Wall Street and make us some money fast? Because
right.
there's huge incentives right now for this. What is this? And who are these people? And nobody told us they had money. But who is this who we are deciding? And there is actually a time when none of us were in that room at all. So you're talking about super mystery. And that's how you're going to get an Earl Graves and Black Enterprise Publishing. That's how you're going to get them to say, well, no, this is these, we did this study and Black people spend this amount on toothpaste. And did you know Black people have as many teeth as your average Asian or European family? Did you know that Latinos have as many hair follicles as a, it's like, no, sell them shampoo, sell them toothpaste. Like, what's, you know, just all like this madness. And so in my house, I grew up with that kind of information, but it's also being taken very seriously. And that's on the marketing end. My dad did not do marketing, nor did my mother, but as a kid, that's the part that kind of you can understand better. I saw a Black girl on the toothpaste commercial, and you like never saw that before. We have teeth. Yeah, they know you have teeth. They used to count them. So it's kind of like only a sound, right, is left for that. So Black Wall Street. So I'm like, oh, snap, Oklahoma. Yeah, I was looking at the Gap Band because they're from Oklahoma.
Oh, yes.
And they had this song, Dropped a Bomb on Me. I was like, wait a minute. Okay. What? And then it was Tulsa. And I was like, and then I'm reading about, so I didn't know about the Tulsa race riot. And therefore I didn't know about the real Black Wall Street because it was also a moniker given to it after.
Right. After
that historic time. So I didn't feel sacrilegious in not knowing about what it was, but then to find more and more that more people had not heard of it for the devastation that it caused. And so also this creeping feeling that we were about to head up into in the past 10 years or however long, it's a sense of doom impending, but it's not doom. It's that, no, something happened and we made ourselves allow ourselves to allow others to unremember, to forget in silence. So we don't feel silent. We just have forgotten. We did not tell you. We didn't want to hurt your feelings because we were working for more and we got the more, but then this doom. So what is this collective best wish we have for ourselves? But it feels like there's a bitter pit in it also. Mm. And that is the bitter pit of this juicy plum I've been growing with my kids.
When you, when you travel in your mm-hmm. discovery, right, as you do, do you feel there's kind of a kind of ancestral hand in there? Is it, you mm-hmm. know, because obviously doing a lot in terms of building an architecture, structure, they have this precision, this skill, but there seems to be a spiritual dimension to it.
Literally. On my mother's side, my great, great uncle is Hall Johnson. Mm. And he was a, do you know? who yeah. that is? So as a collector of the slave songs of his grandmother, Alice, and then top flight musician. So he created the world he could live in. So it's, I have this knowledge, right? My grandmother was a slave. Mm-hmm. I've heard that voice. So I don't know what that must have been like to have the ancestral voice at your family reunion. Mm. That's gone. We will never have that. People have passed on. So that's what he was filled with. And it's a family habit, I'll say. And when you have it in you, it has to come out, but not into the raw air. You have to give it to somebody, and you have to give it to as many people as you can. And so when he formed the Hall Johnson Choir in New York City, he gave people a person to borrow money from. He gave people who wanted to sing a place to tell their family they were going. Where you go? I'm going to Mr. Hall's. Mr. Hall, that's my dad. Mr. Johnson's, sorry. That's a coincidence, by the way. His name just was Hall. But that happens to be my surname on my dad's side. But I love a complication. Yes. Oh, in Porgy Bess, that's a complication. That's a complication. Yes. No. Or whatever. That word complication. Gershwin got that right. Or the librettist for that. That's more than a thought for us. Gets you in and out of trouble. So, the spiritual. I always imagine. I remember my parents watching Roots, the miniseries. I was very young.
Yes.
And I woke up. I wasn't not supposed to be awake. I remember it was very illegal for me to go in the TV room and be there while they were watching this show. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was 4, 5, I don't know.
Something.
And then, yeah. And then there was a very violent scene, but nobody was punching each other. It was lynching involved, but I didn't know what I was looking at. And I laughed. I went, ha-ha, because, you know, Tom and Jerry, you hear a thump. You laugh. You don't know what you're looking at. And my parents, oh my God, the look. Oh, I could just feel it. It's one of those things in a drama class. They say, okay, well, think of a thing and it can bring me all the way to where I need to be. It's just like a huge, I'm not going to go with the flow now. I could, but I won't because I would be acting. But it's like, ooh, the look they gave me when I laughed. The horror, it was like, so it put me into the television of that scene in Roots. It was like my family was there.
Yes.
And I had gotten that chastisement at somebody's grave. I got to sing at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, this piece. Toshi Reagan invited it to come, so she had on her curator hat. In that moment, she has many wonderful hats, also great singer and guitarist, band leader and activist and social scientist. So she, in the music world, by my measure. So she invited it there. And then this just other thing happened. I remember former publisher of Essence, not the publisher, the editor in chief, Susan
Taylor. Yeah.
Susan Taylor was there mm-hmm. with somebody. Maybe I don't want to be wrong in the name I say, so I'm so timid to say who she came with. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. But like, really? The woman from the magazine at the time of my parents looked at me when I laughed at Roots, and it was like all these people from this right. time. Like to quake when you quake. And the spirituals, the Negro spirituals, so of which Hall Johnson, concert arranger, some of the greatest voices ever to live. He had collaborations. Okay, so I'd do a collaboration, a collabo. His collabos were with Marian Anderson. Like he would send her a the arrangement. And she'd say, well, I like it very much. I think I'll sing it at the ladies' luncheon at DuPont Circle. And like, they, can you write me? Like, that's the collabo. So that's not new, right?
Yeah,
just find the best person to lay it on you that you possibly can. Just follow that person into anywhere. Just follow the person because you know where they're going. Because I see this story already, you know, and unfortunately, I think also just for some young people, they hear that and they literally will follow these people. I don't mean literally into abuse and degradation. You follow a person. No. I mean, they ask you to do something that sounds lightly tangential to something you read about in a book once. And it's like, well, James Baldwin set up this thing, and now this person wants me to do this thing, and it feels in my body to me like that. I will do this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I might feel naked or feel stripped, or I feel my dignity leaving, but in the work I do with the people I get to do it with, I feel that when the dignity leaves, something comes back in immediately. It doesn't wait. You don't get it after signing. It's like you immediately feel a substitution of something that was the artifice, something that I worked to put on, and then the thing that was underneath. And yeah, right? So mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's like, I think when I think of Toni Morrison, the idea like, oh, the gold under the skin, that you peel the skin, you get this gold and the violence of that, but then also the beauty revealed. And she knows, and I know that don't mean let somebody take a razor and peel your skin back. Like, we're really in a weird time where I think so many people are trying to find something deep to do, but they're being demons
in the process.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And to not understand that unless you strip someone and then hand them a robe right away, you're destroying us as a culture. You must have that robe at the ready. We have no time to lose anybody. I will not do it. And we've had some magnificent public lessons, and for free, people like you, for free, who have jobs to teach people things and get advances to write books about things, are for free on the internet saying what you just happened to think today about a thing. It's free. It's out there. And it's not even available to everyone because not everyone has a computer or Wi-Fi. But within a range, it's available to a heck of a lot more people, things you can think on a Tuesday morning. And to not understand that these swords come with whole books about how to build yourself up. So to read things out of context, to take a line and say, this every day is survival for them and for us. Them who sit with the worst of this, our friend, I say our friend just because I don't know if you know her, but Akiba Solomon, she works at the Marshall Project. That's right.
Yeah.
So I read out of being like, I want to support my friends. Oh, I'll subscribe to your thing. I'm a subscriber, writer up, buy a ticket or two, your thing. I love the being the thing. So that thing with the, for the thing and the thing. I love to know because your friends lead you to the coolest, most interesting, right? Like so interesting. So she's all, I sign up for these newsletters, Southern Poverty Leadership. Oh my God, Law Center. The newsletters that they send will crack your skull of information of what is going on in this country. It's like, okay, but because of my friend, my buddy, I'm going to read this. And then I read it and then I'm a better person. So that's also what I mean. I think just so often I get sad because I think sometimes people think you're joking and they think it's that, oh, if you do this thing, you're going to get $1 million. They don't get no money. They think if you, oh, you know, smart people and you get smart. No, it's nothing but heartaches. But it's such a beautiful life. It's so beautiful.
This is, you know, so I was, you talked about Roots. I feel like Roots, ooh, when it was on television, was like both this definitive experience and a collective trauma for people of our generation. I mean, I had for years based on the Knight Riders here. But there's something about our presence, the whole world watching, right? Mm. And then what you have to do with that wound, right? I mean, and I guess to me, I mean, part of what I hear you saying is that you do have to do something with it, that cannot take that lightly. And right? And that's part of the work of being a parent as well, in a very particular sense, a mother, right? Yeah. Okay. I know we're going, our time has been somewhat long, but I want to ask you two more quick questions that are really important to me.
Yes, ma'am.
And one is about collaboration, to go back to your point about collaboration. I had an interview about a year ago, actually, almost exactly a year ago, where someone said, who's the writer who most influences you? Your work directly. And I said, Thelonious Monk. And they looked at me like I'm crazy. I was trying to think about stylistically. And I said, well, you know, I don't try to model my work on writers because I don't want to be derivative. Our techniques, you work a lot with visual artists as well as other musicians. And I'm interested, what I see, and correct me if I'm wrong, what I see is that it doesn't often, when I watch what you've done or listen, it doesn't just feel like the collaboration. It feels like each artist like comes to full fruition. Does it feel that way for you?
Finish what you mean, each artist comes to full fruition. What does that mean?
I don't feel like it's not like, you know, sometimes you can see the seams in a collaboration where it's a collage, where you can see like the glue in the edges. And then other times there's not a feeling that something, in what I have noticed consistently, I don't feel like there is a kind of partial self. Does that make sense?
Did you say you don't feel that there's a kind of partial self?
Yeah, that there's a fullness.
Okay, so you said, I don't feel that there's a kind of partial self.
It's like there's all these caveats in it. What I mean is,
I don't feel that there's not a kind of partial self. I don't feel that there's not a kind of partial self. Feel self. That's what you just said.
Yes.
So that's what you said. Everything that wasn't a modifier of an uncertainty.
That's the
core. Even the word partial means of a. So you are, as people do, being the thing. So when I work with somebody, I'm going to F you up. Now, who I mean by you, I don't know.
Right.
It might be me.
Right. Yep. I
only know this from experience of the people that I think have been, who just also love me the most. So, because my husband, my kids, like when I work with them, I had given my kids, okay, they said, they were talking to me. I made this poem out of what they said. Then I was like, okay, go up here. There's going to be a lot of people and it's going to be microphones. But just say the thing and I'm going to sing. I wrote these kind of songs to go with some of these things you're saying. But then we got there. And, okay, mind you, my kids are 8. All right. This is a major museum. Which one was? This was PS1. And when they had that, the MoMA,
yes.
The one they had in that big geo
dome.
And then we were basically in outer space with all these critics and art people. And then I had to read the thing. There were big projections of their heads, like 20 feet tall. And then and I don't know. I just, in the moment, I was like, that sentence shouldn't be there. And I was like, this other sentence, I just was edited. So I sang something different. And then the whole show stopped. They just looked at me. And when twins look at you, oh my God, you can't take it. It's so cute because they have the same shape head and both the heads just, they're like, basically like, mom, you messed up. Like you didn't do what she said you was going to do. So now what do we do? Do we do A or do we do, you told, but they didn't say anything because they're well equipped. They just were like looking at me like, whoa. Which one do you know? And also the same when they do their lessons, if their dad is a piano accompanying, the lesson in some quite rigid piano accompaniments that go with these violin parts. So meaning like if you mess up, they're going to know. You cannot swing your way out of it. Or 20th century something in there to smooth it over. It's just you messed up. The boys, they will look at you. And I feel like from that, I know the core of who I really am as an artist. My art just kind of begins in that moment when they're just looking at you. Right there, that's where I want to start.
Yes.
Right there, start. What are you doing?
But you know what? I love that so much, too.
What is that?
Being an artist and being a mother are sometimes posited as being, and sometimes they are. There's a tension.
Yeah.
Right? But it's also the source of so much abundance.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to answer these faces looking at you.
Mm. And the answer is deep, right?
Yes.
You answer them with your mother's answer. You feel it coming out of your mouth. You're like, no, I never will. There it is. My mother was right. Which is, what did her mother tell her? When she told her, I'm so connected to that. And okay, so I'll take it a little more seriously what you ask me, because it's a dangerous territory for me. So, because I care about it, you know? So it's like people, when you get asked to work with somebody, you realize also you are connecting their forebears to your forebears. Whatever's running through the back of their head is going to attach to whatever's running through the back of your head. And you collaborate on everything, even things that seem like they're supposed to be written down and done. You know, I went to Manhattan School of Music and, oh man, that's a whole opera in itself getting there. And then, but anyway, I went there, I really got so much out of it. And they had a program there called Collaborative Piano, mm-hmm. I think is the major. So it's not an accompanist, right, or it's not a piano player, or it's not the pianist. It's when you're studying the art of it, you're a collaborative pianist. And so what is in the give and take of that? Who are the parents of that? And then if you're so lucky to marry a jazz musician and you're coming from a classical basis. My classical basis, however, is through a black man. So that's the Hall Johnson connection. He brought his string quartet, Negro string quartet, onto the stage of Carnegie Hall multiple times. He had his Easter cantata played there before 1950. I mean, we've already done all these things, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think when I collaborate with somebody at this point, no, that's a lie. Not at this point. I think always. I think the other person, you would have to ask people what they think. I have no idea what they're thinking. But I feel when they ask me that they're looking to touch some of that.
Yes.
That I know about these other victories that have already been won. Mm. So my husband and I, we did a piece called Work Songs at the Venice Biennial. And I feel nervous because I don't know who the people are. Like, I don't know these people. I'm not talking about anyone in particular. So it's not like about, I just hate to spit some people. Oh, she said you, that I don't know who said this. But I just remember there being some bit of a passersby feeling in some people that they were like, oh, well, I don't know what that has to do with Work Songs, I don't know what this was. It was like classically trained. It was like some gospel head voice. I say head voice, like, you know, the shaky voice. Like, what were they saying? I don't know. I can't remember what they're wearing. They're all dressed up. Like, what is it? They're not, they're singing. It's kind of John Henry is in there, but they're not really. we deep into the, like, getting in the 21st century. Like, we get what people was dressed. People, as if we didn't know that's my point basically though.
Yes.
As if we didn't know, you, that's when you write an email, you say, I'm writing I'm reading about your piece. Okay, why don't you tell me what I don't get? What don't I know entering into this? Where are we on the map of all performance? Because I'm looking for something and I don't see it. So where is it? Oh, well, first of all, if you had seen it, I wouldn't be doing it at an art fair for you.
How about that?
Because they don't pay me for that. Catch me outside. That's what my kids say from that young child on the internet. I saying that, does she know? I feel like, where's her record? Who is that girl? I don't know what that is, but my son's who's like, catch me outside. How about that? Like, damn, that's so brilliant. Thank you. Even Smokey Wonder's like, catch me outside. How about that? I mean, it's so good. God bless her soul. Who is she? Is she having, I shouldn't make light because nowadays the way things are shown to us, sometimes we're not shown like huge amounts of backstory and trauma that makes something else look more essential than it is. But in aligning to that girl, I just explained my feeling about that piece. It was just like, yeah, but I didn't write, you know, I still have space for her. Like, So I kind of like feel that I love my job so much. And I've never said out loud what that piece was really about. It would not be understood, but it's just about people to feel it. Did you need to feel that today? Did you need to see that title and walk in and see those people up there working? Yes. Those people ain't not been working. What do you do for a living? But your rough and tumble, scarred up, cotton picking, broken back hands. What did you do today at your job that you complain about on the internet? Was your children sold? Was your face scratched? Did you pee into a bag so that you could, like, did you, like, what do you know? If I would do it that way, in what year is it now? I can't tell you how many millions of dollars that would cost someone of me. You want to see that? There's a place you're going to see that. Write that check to Alex Haley and he will convene the forces. And other people are getting these checks to convene the forces to show you where and in exactly. Where we did work songs, anyone could walk in at any time and anyone could leave at any time. Anyone. Thinking anything. So I'm going to send my friends across seas to be looked at by anyone on a European vacation, thinking anything for 3.5 months in the middle of the summer in Venice. Let me tell you what you're going to see of my friends. Anyone can take a picture from any angle at any time. We can talk more about it another time. I don't make a zoo for people.
That's right.
So anyway, that's either neither here nor there. I mean, I don't even know what, but I've never had anyone, I don't know, something about you and Noah. Because here we go, Imani. People need to know. We don't hang. I don't know you. Your life's work is available to people. I feel the pull of history in the satellite. We're in the same place.
Yes.
I read you writing about your sons. I am not an imbecile. I don't put my sons into your sons in the sentences. I don't need to do that. That's not what it's about. And I don't like the spectacle that other people need of the feeling that that's what we are doing.
That's right.
We are swip-swatching it. Me too. No. You don't understand. Oh, don't get me started on me too. That gratitude.
I could talk to you forever.
Child.
Offline.
Lady, look, I'm a singer because I like to, and you know, the mouth, innuendo aside or there within, who cares? It's like, yeah, that's where we're living. So I'm just doing my job and I appreciate the ways in which you've broken me free of something by connecting to me in my little space where I am, because that is, let me put it this way. We all who are like me, we fawn over photographs we see of certain people standing next to each other.
Oh, yes.
Don't you? Like, I delight in it. But, you know, it's not someone from above placing these two together. Wouldn't it be delightful if Justin Bieber and Lauryn Hill sang a song together? I mean, yeah, of course, I'm sure it would be delightful. I don't know. But I'm talking about something else. Like, we don't have a Grammys between us. It's like you said, and I'm going to just, I don't know, make a phone call today. You just inspire me to be in the photograph and gather. Those aren't photo shoots. Those are people were doing something and then somebody took a picture.
That's right.
Maybe that's what I mean.
To support this show and Dublab's progressive programming, go to dublab.com/support.